Hello and welcome back to day 5 of Data School Stories / Diaries. Sent in here to tell you about what happened on the last day of the first week, Friday, of the CoData RDA Summer School, which kind of brought to conclusion several aspects, because from next week the program goes into slightly different directions. All throughout this process so far, we've had basically the collection of two different sets of groups. There's one large group of the early career researchers, which has PhD or postdoc students, mostly from non-European countries, here to learn more about data science. And then there's five of us who are on the data stewards track, who are a later addition to the program, which I'm a part of. And so far this week, we've been working together, doing the same kind of workshops and interacting with one another. And then next week, we are separate more, and there's two different sets of programs, one for us and one for them. So that might change things quite a bit, because there are only five of us, and the conversations and the kind of things that we do will obviously be a lot more different than what was there before. I also hope that in a way that it will allow us to talk about the issues that are pertinent to us within our environments. I know that Chiara, who's one of the other students, or participants of the school, is a librarian with the University of Bergamo, and her and I have already chatted and found that we have similar, that we work in with similar tools and landscape and have similar issues that to deal with. But anyway, that's for next week. I'm here to actually talk to more about what happened on Friday, which was quite a smorgasbord, a buffet of different activities. So the morning was a dramatic morning, not in a bad way or not over the top, but it became more of a bit more of a theatrical performance. Gail, one of the lecturers who had worked with us before from the author Carpentry, who worked with us through ORCID and who worked with us through our markdown, wanted to work on licenses, or she wanted to try to explain licenses in the predatory world, which is a good follow-up from the predatory journals webinar that we had the day before. Her way of teaching the licenses was to write a little script that had a couple of authors, several authors decide to write a joint paper, and then one of the authors decide that they will go and publish it separately as a book and not giving enough credit to authorship. It was an interesting experience being on stage. I was cast as one of the evil publishers who took money to publish a book without quite, well, not breaking any laws, but because I guess the point of it being was a lot about your own copyright and how do you hand over copyright to journals. And of course, for the early career researchers, the whole path to kind of gaining academic notoriety in a good way or establishing your academic profile is by publishing in high impact journals, which can pose a lot of pressure towards you to not only write, but to find the appropriate way of publishing. And what kind of rights journals give to you once you've assigned them the right to publish things. So the tension between copyright and assigning your own license became quite interesting. And I guess the script allow us to see that in a little way. And perhaps there's lots of different situations you could write out. And I guess the theatrical person in me was like, okay, you could write the scene like this, you could write like that, but that wasn't really the point. I think the fact that she staged it and had quite fun props and things made everybody laugh a bit about this whole topic while also trying to gain important information and seeing it in action. I know at DLS we had come across this, or I believe that Nicholas had mentioned the fact that we are now looking at adding more than just having an author as a credit-bearing person within a publication, especially when we're talking about data. And I think that's something for me that kept reappearing, and I guess it's also partly because in my future jobs in publications, there's probably a strong chance that I'll work on something as a data curator. And you could build quite a portfolio of helping people with their research. But besides being put in the acknowledgements, you don't really get any kind of contribution dedicated to yourself. And I think the guys within GIS also struggle with this because their only limit is in the acknowledgements and they don't carry any credit. And the landscape of academic publishing is still very heavily relied on. I mean, it's either you're an author or you're being acknowledged as something. So author has so much power, and does everybody deserve to be an author? But we don't at this point seem to have the metadata or the structures to capture the other roles that people do to participate in the creation of new knowledge. And Gail had let us know about Project Source or Project Credit. It's actually Project Credit, I believe, that is working towards establishing a kind of standards and controlled vocab for allowing other contributors to be listed alongside whatever that you might be published, which I think is quite exciting. And this was an offline question that I'd asked her that wasn't part of the initial discussion because we didn't have time, because I think for everybody it was more about trying to break down the licenses, what the Creative Commons, what the BY stands for in the SA and the NC, and who has what right kind of carrying on. And we didn't quite explore it in detail as much, and we didn't stage different varieties of what one person can do and can't do. It was still a good chance to kind of focus on the different issues around publication and also see how, I think just there are a few case studies of I wasn't aware of, and I guess within the drama field, in terms of publishing, it's usually you yourself who write the article and you get credit for it yourself. But from the stories of other early career researchers, it seems that in other institutions, it is quite easy, or it seems to be a certain practice in which supervisors of research or people who are part of the same team get added on as authors to a specific project, even though they don't actually do any work in the writing of it. Maybe they do work on the side. And there's also a horrible stories where it seems like you have principal investigators who forcefully put themselves up on as co-authors of certain papers without doing any work, and which kind of limits the power of an early career researcher to make their mark. And I guess just further increases the cycle of somebody who's already more established just getting more citations. It seems like it's quite a rough world out there. After that session, Louise Bezedenot took us through a kind of open science challenges and practices and putting it in context, which asked us to reflect on the challenges that we face in our local environments where we come from, and then looking at the tools that we had taken on in the first week and seeing which ones we can apply later in our work. And this felt like a sum up of the first week. And it felt that my challenges from UCT can sometimes be a bit quite different from, because it's not so much being at UCT, but being from the position of being a data steward, that the challenges are different from somebody who's an early career researcher. But everybody had a chance to write down on their own piece of paper, then we put it together, and then we had a bit of a discussion in smaller groups about what can be done and what can't be done. And I found it fascinating that within my group, a lady called Princess, who's working in public health out of Ghana, had mentioned, I guess, one of the things that I've been looking at, because she was mentioning how it was interesting to see how different people had taught the course, the different modules, and how you can take from that and apply it in your own context. We also touched upon the fact that all these early career researchers who have been here for the week, when they go back to the institution, they have the potential to start something up, to contribute, to share their knowledge with other people, and then further on build on support from the rest of the network that they've now activated, which sounds really great and very positive. But it does still hint that a lot of the challenges that are present is that the institutions and the people within the institutions just keep doing the way they've been doing it. And the open science switch is something that's going to require quite a bit of time and advocacy and training in order to get people aligned with it so that we can all kind of contribute more. Louise also took some time to talk about bias and being aware of the different contexts that people work in, trusting, how much do you trust the data, how much do you trust the algorithms. She took some examples, everything from Google's, I believe it was Google's AI recognition facial software, struggles with certain groups of people because of its data and because of who's building the algorithm. The same way she talked about a certain algorithm in the United States, which is meant to calculate if somebody's allowed bail and how it's kind of biased against African Americans. And these issues, or these two topics, brought out a few interesting comments from the audience, which made me think about how a humanist or somebody in the creative field can be a lot more open to the idea of bias, hopefully I say, than perhaps somebody working within science, even though later on in the day we looked at papers who got things wrong in their formula. But this kind of implicit belief that somehow formulas don't lie and data doesn't lie, and yet how you must acknowledge within yourself that how you select the data and how you write the algorithm includes a sense of human bias to it that cannot be escaped. And it is not right, and it's not right, but it's almost too much to kind of say, well, science is neutral. And as somebody rightly pointed out, that the data that is used to predict the future with a lot of algorithms is based on historical data, which carries a lot of bias, because if we look back at our history, we have made a lot of mistakes, obviously, and the people who were in power previously had to push their agenda. It made me think of a wider issue and a wider kind of debate, and looking at working especially with people within the natural sciences or computer sciences, or how much belief they have in science to be neutral, and how that can sometimes disguise the biases that you carry when you practice your science. We couldn't get too deep into it because we were running out of time, but it was just enough to kind of stimulate the mind and start thinking about all of those things. The last session, we had a new lecturer, I guess you can call it, or a workshop leader, Steve Diggs. I believe he's coming out of a university in California. I wouldn't say he's an oceanographer, but he works especially with ocean data and climate science. He didn't so much as talk for a couple of hours as opposed to give us a really interesting, huge, difficult, challenging task. But what he had set up was 4 papers that had been published relating to oceanography and ocean science. And our job in little groups was to read the papers. Well, not quite read it, but look for the data that the papers refer to. Look at how we can access it, how we can recreate some of the experiments that were used to calculate this data, which is quite a fascinating hands-on experience. I was put in a group of 8, which probably could have been just a little bit too big of a group. We could have gone with a little bit smaller because, as we discovered, part of the task is learning how to work in a team very quickly and how everybody's trying to, well, everybody has their own personality of how they deal with trying to take charge, and at some point somebody pushes so much and other people recede and all of that. So I guess my tactic was, look, I was put as the communicator, which I thought was the best role for me, looking at everybody else who was coming from a science or a programming background. So I took I wouldn't say I took a step back, but I was focusing on getting our presentation sorted, because at the end of like 2 hours of work, we had to present to the class what we had found. It was very complicated, partly because in the article that we picked, there were references to a lot of different data, and it was difficult for us to decide which data is being pointed to. And I still think perhaps we were just eager to start looking for data without reading enough of the explanations, like the manual for it. But it didn't matter. It was quite an interesting experience. And Steve walked around and helped people out. He showed us an interesting app called Ocean Data View, which allows you to access Argo data. And Argos are these little canisters that get deposited in water and then go with the flow of the water. And they feed back data about the salinity and the temperature and various oxygen levels of the water. And all of this is feeding into bigger algorithms that look at how the temperature of the oceans is changing the climate. And he has a very cool example. And he did a good job, Steve, of just explaining the basics around how things work and how important oceans are to the study of climate science, because they cover more of the earth than any other material. Working together, it was quite a diverse group. You had people who had very strong desires to get things done. I think also there was a drive to just like, we got to get this perfect, but then frustration when you couldn't quite work it out. It involved a little bit of command line. It involved a little bit of getting this ocean data view program going and plotting it. And I don't think we actually end up in the end being able to recreate it, because we spent quite a lot of time trying to find the data and figure out how this data works. And for me at the end, one of the questions that it asked is, in terms of open science, when it says, you know, you publish your data openly as possible, as close as necessary, who's the target? Is it people within your field, or, you know, it's that thing of like being publicly available? Do you at some point have to do your metadata, in which you assume that the person can be quite clever but doesn't know all the inside knowledge of people within your field? And within a lot of these, maybe just requires further reading, within a lot of these articles, it feels like we are just assuming that you know what you need to know about this. That was quite an intense Friday afternoon. To to finish the week because it was quite hands-on. It was quite pressureful. And even though it only lasted till about 4:30, no, it actually went until 5. After 5, it still took quite a toll and got everybody into working gear. But the task did remind me of the kind of activities that are given to us at DLS, especially when we don't know the field, and the ability to switch between different fields and know a little bit about everything. And the idea that, you know, does a data steward embed itself within a department and they carry that knowledge? Or do we, DLS, should know enough about everything to be able to help at a basic level people out? It made me think of trying to figure out if we should keep some kind of record of the different departments and their specific needs around fair practices, so that when we meet certain repeat cases or repeat departments, we can be more prepared and not have to remember how did we do this the last time around. It was also a day of some interesting conversations with a few other people, especially with the early career researchers, because I guess it's kind of like the last time we integrate ourselves with them in the labs or the workshops, hearing stories about how some people use, what kind of work they're doing. There was a case from a lady from, I think it's Mariana from Costa Rica, who is studying traffic data, and she uses R to clean up the data and arrange it and make calculations. She seemed way ahead the workshop that we had done, but it was just interesting to make that contact with somebody who does it on a day-to-day basis. And I guess it just shows you how much work is being done around the world, and that the people who are still very incredibly advanced in their field and in terms of the skills that they have. So that concludes the first week. Overall, I think there was a lot to be gained from it, not only with the contacts and the conversations, but looking at, I think, the highlight of getting a bit more comfortable with R was definitely there. Seeing how other lecturers approach teaching their subjects in terms of pitching their levels, interactiveness, and all of that was quite a highlight. And I think the R markdowns did as something that can immediately be used. And now going forward, it will be interesting to see next week whether the data stewards can bond a bit more and talk about the issues that they do and how we can extract knowledge and shared experiences to use and to bring back into our environments. Thanks for listening. That's day 5. The next episode should look at the following week.